Good morning, everyone. You're listening to On Film here at 88.5 KTEP. My name is Felipa Solis, and it's a pleasure to be here today, sitting in for Chuck Horak, who is doing great things in Africa. Also joining us today is Kyle Alvarado, who is a film expert and has incredible things to say about some of the films that are coming out now that the summer blockbuster season is winding down. Good morning.
Good morning, Felipa. It's nice being here for Chuck. It's fun. This is our second time.
Absolutely. And I know Chuck, as I mentioned, is doing great things, but we'll be back soon. Mm-hmm. What we're talking about with respect to movies that are not just necessarily Marvel comic films, it seems like there are two that are not just taking the box office by storm. Well, one maybe is, but they're also thought-provoking films for a change.
I agree. And it's kind of nice that the summer movie season sort of ended with these two very different films. Don't Breathe, which is one of them, and Hell or High Water, the second one. Both of them are actually big box office successes in their own right. Don't Breathe has been the number one film for about 2 weeks running. Hell or High Water has been just sort of like a quiet storm just at the bottom of the chart, but having a lot of high per theater averages, and it's kind of a powerful film.
And also, I mean, the acting is absolutely superb. And as you mentioned, a film like Hell or High Water, you just kind of heard about off to the side as you're walking and spending your big bucks as you're going into a box office extravaganza for the summer. And it had a very limited release. And with that, its release is growing because of the incredible success mm-hmm. of the film based on the quality of the film.
It's written by the man who wrote Sicario, Taylor Sheridan. I believe it's his second feature. It takes place in West Texas. It's about a pair of brothers played by Ben Foster and Chris Pine.
Chris Pine, who is absolutely fantastic in this. And if you're used to seeing Chris Pine in films like Star Trek and such, where he's that guy, if you will. He's the man behind the scenes, and he's the good-looking leading man. But here, he's on a mission, and he's on a good one.
He's still the good-looking leading man, but
he is. He's taken it to a place where it took, let's say, for example, a Matthew McConaughey, it took him a long time to get to that place. And I think as an actor, if he can go there now, he's in good shape.
Oh, yeah. But you know what, though? The one who steals the show from me is Jeff Bridges.
He's brilliant, isn't he?
And it's nice to see him just sort of, you know, he just kind of rolls into the movie. He has this great rapport with his co-star. One of the things that I enjoyed a lot about the picture was the way that it was shot. I think maybe because I love Sicario so much, which is shot by the great Roger Deakins, and it also reminded me a lot of No Country for Old Men, which is also shot by Roger
Deakins. That's what the film reminded me of a great deal, and that's why we were talking earlier before we went on the air about that Coen Brothers kind of quirky nuances in the film. And one thing about Jeff Bridges, as he's going into the twilight of his career, and here are these two young great actors next to him, he plays a Texas Ranger who's done. He's done. He doesn't want to have to deal with yet another problem. He wants to be able to retire in peace and go out on into the sunset. Mm-hmm. But yet these two guys who, one a criminal, one not so much. He just wants to fight for his family. He has to deal with them. Another thing about this film that I found really phenomenal is how it addressed at the time the banking industry and how it works.
Yeah.
And those quirks that make it so unique, and how a man who was trying to just do good for his family is denied a loan by the bank. So let's go after the bank.
Well, I find it interesting that there really isn't a villain in the movie. I mean, if there is a villain, it is the bank. You know, you find yourself rooting for the brothers, you root for Jeff Bridges' character, and at the end, I think you're left with a lot of conflicting feelings about who is sort of the hero of the story.
That's very true. But I must say, as far as performances, you say Jeff Bridges. For me, it was Ben Foster. Mm. And I first kind of discovered him. Well, wasn't he that kid on the Disney Channel who used to sing and dance? Well, he was that guy. So when he was in 3:10 to Yuma, as you can imagine, it wasn't like the Britney Spears overhaul. It was like, wait, now you were the kid on the Disney show. So he has a tremendous amount of talent. That's not to say that you're not a talented actor if you're not in that top 20 Ben Affleck, George Clooney tier. But he is so talented in his own right that I certainly hope that he's nominated for this particular performance because it is truly overwhelming.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, he's been quietly plugging away for years now. I mean, his performances in The Messenger and even in Pandorum, which is kind of a B-grade sci-fi flick, he's quite good in it. And I think now he's been matched with material that sort of it rises to his talents and he exceeds it. And I think hopefully people will take notice and launch him into the next leg of his career.
That's right, because Ben Foster really deserves that. There are few actors that you can see their actual training while they're performing. You know what they're thinking. You know what they're feeling. And they're immersed in the role. He's an ex-con. He's not a good guy. But, well, what he wants to do for his brother is not a bad thing. Even though it's twists and turns, that's what makes Hell or High Water so special. Yeah. And as we mentioned, didn't start out as a box office bonanza, but now people are really taking notice of this film. But there is one box office bonanza that, pardon the pun, takes your breath away.
Don't Breathe. I think it's a fantastic film. It's directed by Fede Alvarez, who directed the remake of Evil Dead, which I thought was equally fantastic. And this one, it's probably one of the best home invasion films, and you know it's a very succinct subgenre in horror, but one of the best ones to come around in years. It stars Jane Levy and the great Stephen Lang.
The great Stephen Lang, absolutely.
Oh, yeah. A lot of us know him from his performance in Avatar, but he's been known as a great actor of the stage for a very long time. And this one, he's quite good. It's almost like a wordless performance. I think he only has like 10 lines in the entire movie. Mm-hmm. And I think there's a lot of tension. There's a lot of buildup. I think it's shot incredibly well. It is incredibly violent. I mean, not for me. I can handle a lot of violence when it comes to movies, but I could see the level of violence in this movie turning some people off.
Yes, indeed. Not where it's kind of the well, we had our experiences with the great Quentin Tarantino and kind of blood gushing. But it's, for me, the fear factor was not so much the violence. The violence is kind of what you almost expect in films now. But for me, the fear factor was that claustrophobic effect of shooting a film in one room. And again, like Hell or High Water, it was done in such a way that, well, the bad guy is not necessarily the intruder. Mm-hmm. And that's not the scenario. It makes for a very unique scenario because how do you defend yourself? You have to defend yourself in your homestead. Dumb kids are invading the space. Mm-hmm. But with that in mind, there was such good performances, and there were such good performances, especially Stephen Lang is overwhelming, that he's maybe not the bad guy after all, and they're not the bad guy. And it was just something that just all went terribly wrong. But again, we were talking about films that go way back as to how there's a suspense mechanism in this film that really works.
Yeah, and what I enjoy is that, like, there are a lot of outlandish twists in the movie, but it does a good job of laying enough sort of breadcrumbs to when, you know, the big reveal happens. There's that big twist in the third act that when it's revealed, you're not completely blindsided by it. You know, there's enough sort of visual clues and background data floating around that allows you to sort of, if you don't figure it out, at the very least when it comes, you don't feel betrayed by it. And I really appreciated that in the screenplay.
That is very well put, because I was thinking of my days of Bruce Willis when I figured that out a long time ago when he was not exactly alive.
One of the other things that I really kind of enjoyed about this movie is that it reminded me so much of Wait Until Dark, which came out in 1967 and starred Audrey Hepburn and Alan Arkin. And I think it has probably the single greatest literal jump scare in cinema.
I remember seeing that film way too young, and it blew me away and didn't sleep for a couple of nights. And you have the same feelings as you walk out of Don't Breathe. You're just really, you're speechless.
Oh, yeah. But like when you go home, you'll be very cognizant of the sounds that you make and you know, the sound of a door closing. It'll put you on edge for a couple of days.
It really will. It just, and when you hear the little bumps in the night, you don't want to be thinking about Stephen Lang on any level. We were talking, too, about some of the more modern-day movies that are horror-based that gave me the same kind of feel, and that was Paranormal Activity, the very first one, not like Paranormal Activity 12, but the one that was made in 2009. And also the original Blair Witch Project, which was so frightening, so real, so handheld, if you will, as far as the way it was shot.
Yeah.
And there were moments like that in Don't Breathe that I think the simplicity of the lack of CGI makes it more real.
Yeah. And you know, I think Alvarez, the director, he's definitely one to watch. He knows how to set a scene. He knows how to build tension. And he's actually given good material. It'd be nice to see him maybe take on a larger picture or maybe a bigger production. And the same for the actress, Levy. I think she's incredibly sympathetic as a performer. And I would like to see her in something akin to like Short Term 12, which starred Brie Larson. I think she'd be very good for something like that.
That would be amazing, because Brie Larson is that kind of an actress too, that she's a beautiful woman, but she plays who she needs to play without worrying about what she looks like. And I think that's wonderful about both of these films, that they are real. And so we hope that as the fall approaches and it becomes award season, and people will stop to take note of things like this, because Don't Breathe has a very special place in, let's say, filmography of 2016.
I think so, yeah. It's one of the stronger pictures. It's low budget. I think it made back its budget in the opening weekend, and I think it's resonating with audiences in a big way.
Same with Hell or High Water. And we talked briefly about sometimes how films make you think. Hell or High Water, there are moments where you have to consider what's happening in West Texas at the time, and there's kind of a racism that's subtle. It's casual, it's subtle, but it was what it was. And so it addresses so many issues, and yet it covers them brilliantly.
Oh, yeah. My favorite thing, it's almost a throwaway line, but they had a nice critique of concealed carry, which I thought was very interesting after one of the bank robberies.
And it makes you think about other films always. And that's what's very, very special about films that are that good, is that you think about the ones who they obviously dance with, the ones who brung you. And so when you've got inspiration from the people who made great movies back in the day, you know that you're going to have something good to look forward to. And I think we have a lot to look forward to this month with films like Sully.
Oh, yeah. That one should be very good. I'm excited for that one. It's Tom Hanks and Clint Eastwood. What more can you ask for?
What more can you ask for? And I think it's wonderful that Clint Eastwood, at the age of 86, is still a bona fide, very active filmmaker. So he's also a musician. He also likes to compose the film music. So we can talk about that next time, too.
Oh, yeah, Philippa, before I forget, the Draft House has partnered with Mother of Pearl Vinyl to create a music film series that is in conjunction with the Mother of Pearl Block Party next week. The film series will show three music-based films, including The Decline of Western Civilization, Fat Wreck, the Punkumentary, and the new Ron Howard documentary, 8 Days a Week, The Touring Years, which focuses on the Beatles. For more information, you can check out drafthouse.com.
Kyle, it's always so wonderful to talk to you, because I learn so much every time, because you are just a film
geek.
I'm a film geek. You are brilliant when it comes to research and understanding what is past, present, and future in filmmaking. You've been listening to On Film here at KTEP 88.5. We're filling in for the great Chuck Horak, who's doing great work in Africa. Stay tuned. Have a great morning. We'll talk to you next week here on Film.